Blog Talk Radio.
All right. We got all kinds of stuff going on tonight. When you're talking about talking hoops, you're talking about a show that brings the real deal. Over the course of now almost 8 years, coming up on 8 years since me and little old Ryan Appleby started this show, we've definitely done a lot of things. But tonight we're going to be bringing on a guest, a guy who I think he's got a lot more credentials than he's maybe letting on with a name like Jake. Not that Jake's not a good name, because it sounds like it's a very good name. Works real well for a lot of different quarterbacks that played at University of Washington and a couple other famous Jakes. But he's not really telling much about himself, but I have a feeling he knows this stuff. Jake, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here.
I like to think that I'm the original Montlake Jake, but that might go to Locker.
Well, you know, I was thinking Jake Plummer too. You know, with Arizona State, there's quite a few great Jakes out there in the world of sports and, you know, the world of rock and roll even too. But at any rate, just wanted to check in with you, and we have been doing a very interesting conversation amongst you and I, but there's been a lot of other people that have been weighing in. I find myself sort of fielding a lot of attacks about my opinions on Jan Cohen and Romar.
My anti-Husky half-brain group that likes to chime in on Twitter too.
Yes. And I invite it. You know, I'm very outspoken and opinionated, and I appreciate that you're a loyal Husky and a guy who's been around the Seattle basketball scene for a while and knows his stuff and has, from all indications, understands a little bit about sports journalism as well. Knows kind of what goes into this. So I'm looking forward to our conversation. I guess first of all, the premise of this conversation is I take this a point that I think that it was a very big mistake on the part of Jen Cohen, and I think I'll explain to you why I feel that way, to fire Romar. Not so much that it was a bad thing to hire Mike Hopkins. I think if it were something different like Lorenzo Romar, God forbid, you know, was hit by a truck or something like that, then hiring Mike Hopkins would have been a pretty good choice in retrospect, I think. But that's my opinion. Your opinion is that it was a good choice, that the time was right for Romar to move on, that he lost a step, as it were, and a variety of other factors. And you're happy with the choice, and that you at one time were in fact like me and thought they should keep the class because of the amazing talent that you've recognized in Michael Porter Jr. and the other guys that you're up on basketball enough to understand how great that class was. And you were originally of the opinion that I'm at, yet you turned around seeing Mike Hopkins coach. Am I right? Tell me if I'm sticking words in your mouth.
Yeah, no, you're pretty spot on. I mean, I would say that even up to the day that Romar was fired, I was on the fence in the sense that I thought that maybe a new voice needed to be heard in the building. I thought that I was always a big Lorenzo guy, loved what he did at UW, loved him from the beginning. When I first started falling in love with UW basketball before I ever went to UW, his second year when they knocked off Stanford, third year, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was always a big Romar guy, and I just felt like last year it was just time to go. But at the same time, I was of the belief that let's keep this, like, what is 1 year going to make a difference? As it sits tonight, us making it back to the tournament, not looking so hot a couple weeks ago, that was a different story. That time I'm thinking, well, you know, it was going to be a lost year anyways. So if we had a coaching change, we can let the class go. But then when Hopkins was, you know, started out on fire, it was looking like, wow, what a great choice. What a great decision that was. I still feel like it was the right call, but at the same time, yeah, that having that class this year would have been, you know, who knows what would have happened.
Okay. Well, I think you've made some very good points, and I think that I'm going to step in there and I'm going to actually take a pro Washington point of view and say that I And my predictions this year in conference play have been rather poor, as you know from following me a little bit, if you have been out there. I know that some of the others that chime in have been following me, listen to me talk about how UW was going to get beat by Arizona and such as that. And I've missed on a number of games. And Hopkins in conference play, the first half of conference play for sure, and even into the second half, has really done a great job of getting these guys to be effective with this zone. And teams in the Pac-12, I thought, would have been more prepared for it after this entire non-conference season of him showing it, you know, over and over, night after night. And the way Gonzaga just basically, churned it up and spit it out, you know, I thought teams would have done a better job. But they haven't, and UW's consistently got better at execution, and guys have played out of their minds. And I think also a lot of these UW players have really matured, that are good players. These were guys that, you know, like I said before on Twitter, that these were Romar's guys that he believed in, and most of them were guys that have just taken a while to mature. They had really bad sophomore years, almost to a man. And the only one really that looked pretty like he was grasping it towards the second half of conference play was Noah Dickerson, but everybody else was just literally having horrible sophomore years. And in the case of Timmons, horrible redshirt freshman year. And basically what happened was these guys started getting it. These guys started kicking it in. And to give Hopkins all the credit for that is also unfair, because those guys have all been playing basketball for 10, 15 years now, even though they're 20 years old. And, they're learning, and it's kicking in. And a lot of things that they learned from Lorenzo, a lot of things that they learned from other mentors in their life are starting to come to be, and they're starting to be players that can play at this level. And so I'm sure Hopkins has had a lot to do with it, but then there's also Cameron Dollar, who's yelling them at him and working them over like he does to play defense and to go with the program. There's also, Will Conroy, who's been around and has really shown himself to be a force. And then there's also Dave Rice, who's a very, savvy and experienced guy that understands the game. So he's got a lot of – so the idea that Hopkins did this all by magic, it's really been a team effort, and it's really been fun to watch. And I really think they're in good shape to actually go to the NCAA tournament. Despite this loss tonight, what they have to do is they have to beat Colorado. They have to go on the road and beat a Cal team, which is kind of reeling. It's a possibility. It's never easy to play it on the road down at Cal or Stanford for UW for some reason. And they have to beat an Oregon State team that they almost beat on the road. So, I mean, all three of those are toss games. I just don't think they have it in them to beat Oregon right now. And I do not think they can beat Stanford on the road right now. I think it's going to be – they got to win 3 out of 3 of games that are up in the air. If they do that, they're 10-8. And I know a lot of people in the national picture, the Joe Lunardis, would maybe disagree, but I think that puts them on the bubble. And maybe they get lucky. Maybe they do some things in the Pac-12 tournament. And maybe, just maybe, their RPI and their strength of schedule and their success in the non-conference season, some of the quality wins that they got and some of the not-so-bad losses that they have had, like against Virginia Tech and such as that, are going to add up to a squeezing in. So I think they still have a shot. I don't think that they're a lock to be out of the tournament. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't – it's after watching tonight's game, it's tough to say that it's not looking pretty right now.
Right.
I think it's going to – and going with what you said for the rest of the way here in the regular season, I think it's going to take, a couple impressive wins in Vegas. And I mean, those quality wins are there. It was a bad, it wasn't a great loss tonight at home.
Right.
And to go touch on another point that you made, you were talking about how guys have improved this year and you don't think it's all on Hopkins. And of course it's not, a lot of the guys were going to improve one way or the other. As you get a year older in college, when you're playing a sport, you're going to mature the next year. But I do think that Hopkins has a large part to do with that. I mean, just looking at from a defensive perspective, what we're allowing on defense from beyond the arc this year is pretty remarkable. It's about 33% overall, about under 30% in Pac-12 play. That was before tonight.
That's correct.
I'm not sure you're seeing that happen with Romar as the coach. And I mean, Yes, correct. That's what I'm alluding to. And I mean, not to harp on the Romar versus Hopkins thing. It's not really about that. It's not, you know, that's just, we have Hopkins now. And I think the defense they're playing is pretty remarkable. And like you said, maybe some of that has to do with the Pac-12 just not being ready for the zone that they're presenting. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, in football when, you know, teams started bringing the spread into new conferences and the defenses weren't ready, sort of flip it around. The conference isn't ready for the defense we're running now in basketball. And that could change, and maybe we're seeing teams adjust to that. But I still think it's a pretty remarkable job what he has done on the defensive side of the ball to make this team into one of the better defending teams in the nation.
You know, that I think there's a lot of truth to what you said. But I also think that, and I think that Mike Hopkins has been a very good influence on this team. I think that it's hard, though, to really say that it's completely to do with Mike Hopkins. I think a lot of these, the guys that are producing for Washington on both ends of the floor, both defensively and offensively, are all Lorenzo Romar guys. They're all guys that are Conroy guys, like Jalen Noel, like, you know, pretty much all these guys. And he's been around the last few years. I think that Cameron Dollar, if you look at what he did as a head coach at Seattle U in his last season, he was fifth and seventh in the nation in 3-point field goal defense and field goal defense. So he was doing something right. He didn't have the pieces to make things happen at Seattle U. I think that Jimmy Hayford has done a much better job really of going out and getting these grad transfers, and he's really pulled it together maybe more than Cameron was able to do from a standpoint of recruiting. And I think looks like he's going to continue to do that with who he's signed already in the fall and what's going on with his approach to recruiting, because he's been an experienced guy for many years in the Big Sky and put together some really good teams over there. But I think that really Cameron was a good defensive coach, and I think he really helped out too. And I think that he helped Hopkins, you know, translate his system to these guys, you know. And I think that it's been a team effort. They've made some big improvements. But when you bring back an entire team in the Pac-12, don't forget that, I mean, you played enough basketball to know, you know, you don't come within beating a team like USC, who won two NCAA games last year, you know, if you're really, 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 really inept. That's what they did the last 2 years of the two games of the season. And they looked like they could beat him, and they almost did. And they improved over the course of the year. It was just a very tough year. I mean, Marco Fultz went down. They were probably a lot worse team than a lot of people had thought they would be, because they were kind of lulled by what happened the year before when they had Marquise Chris and DeJounte Murray and most importantly, Andrew Andrews. And they were able to get within a couple of foul shots of an NCAA tournament bid, really, you know, either here or there. And people thought, well, this is all going to get better. Everyone's back. But, you know, Dime went down, Fultz went down, a team that was probably at best a 500 or a sub 500 team turned into a doormat, and then everybody's game fell through. So they had a real rough year. And I think that what happened was that everybody came back, and I think everybody took responsibility for their failure. And to a man, they all improved their games. I mean, Dominic Green, especially Noah Dickerson, Sam Timmons, David Crisp, they all pretty well worked hard and took responsibility. And I got to say that some of that has to do with Mike Hopkins, but I think everything is fine with hiring Mike Hopkins. I just think we're kind of skiffing over the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and that's why they fired Lorenzo Romar with the number two or number one, probably when all said and done, recruiting class in the country. I mean, Coach Pete gets a top 10 or top 15 class, and everyone thinks, wow, this is incredible. Lorenzo goes out and gets the number one class, and then you get fired because of the season, even though he had a lot of problems over the past few years. But, you know, we can talk about that. I just think it was a big mistake to fire him. But you tell me what you think.
I mean, you got to keep in mind when you're talking about Peterson that his first class when he came to UW was like 38th in the country. So him making this huge turnaround with this amazing class we have now, I get what you're saying. It's kind of in line with what Romar had going on this past year. But, you know, I mean, those things change with the fortunes of the program. I think that when Romar first got here, it was a program that needed resuscitation, got it. Started getting the guys from in-state for the most part, the guys that were program changers. And, yeah, the class that he had with the – whether you want to look at it with the Porter senior connection or not, whatever, it doesn't matter to me. It still worked, got the guys in, and it was an amazing class. I think timing was coincidental. I think that I'm sure it was a tough decision for Jen to make because that class was going to be so amazing, but she was looking more towards the future. If Lorenzo had the class come in, stayed, and they had a, you know, they could have had a remarkable year. They could have had a decent year. You know, NBA talent is able to achieve a lot at the college level, as teams have shown in more recent years. You know, college or NBA talent sitting on the bench with a back injury isn't going to really help you win too many games.
True.
The guy like Blake Harris, awesome prospect, awesome recruit, highly touted. He got to the college level. I mean, I'm not going to say the guy's a bust yet because he has plenty of basketball in front of him, but was he what everyone imagined? No. Mm-hmm. So would this class have panned out the same exact way at UW as part of it has at Missouri? Of course not. You know, things, circumstances change, and it could have been different. But as we look at it now, it might not have been all, you know, roses. We wouldn't have won the Pac-12. We may or may not have made it to the tournament. Who knows what would have happened?
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know that Michael Porter gets injured if he stays here. I mean, it's like the old deal with Back to the Future. If you change one part of the future, or the past or whatever, then something else could change too. You know, you can't.
Yeah.
There's no way to predict that Michael Porter was going to have the same back injury had he stayed here and played, you know, and stuck it out at Nathan Hale for the rest of the year or whatever he was doing.
Exactly.
You know, so, I mean, it's just, you know, so basically I look at this and let me just start. You made some really good points and I just want to address one of them. And the one that really jumps out at me is that, you know, Lorenzo had a number of bad years. And I hear consistently, and I'm not saying just from you, but from others, I don't think you've really pushed this point so much, that he's had big-time talent before and didn't win, you know, anything or et cetera. And I just don't think that's true. I look at the situation with the year that they won the Pac-12 outright with a 14-4
record. Yeah, and they should have made it into the tournament. Absolutely.
And they should have made it into the tournament. That was ridiculous. Yep. I think it's a flawed system, but that's the system we're dealing with, and
yeah, and I mean
that's what it is.
That would have changed the, I mean, the whole view. I totally agree with you on that point. But that would have changed the whole viewpoint on Lorenzo. I mean, we're talking about sports here. We're talking about coaches, managers, whatever sport it is. It's, you know, I don't need to tell you. It's what have you done for me lately? And
that's right.
When we look at that with Romar. That season when they got robbed of that tournament bid, it really impacted him a lot. And that was extremely unfortunate because we both know they should have made it to the tournament that year. And that would have changed the entire viewpoint for Romar haters, Romar supporters, either way, all the way across the board.
Right. And I think you made a very good point. I think that the truth of the matter is, you know, you look at that Pac-12 conference, if you look at it in retrospect, of the kind of talent that was in that league. Yes, you can say, oh, the Pac-12, and they very often have had really bad showings in November and December, and that year was just one of the worst. But if you look at the actual eye test of guys like Tony Roten and Terrence Ross and C.J. Wilcox and Abdul Gaddy and so on and so forth, what they have put on the court and the way that they were able to to win that league, they were going up against some pretty spectacular players. They were going up against some pretty spectacular coaches. Andre Roberson was a big story. Alan Crabb, who's now made $80 million this past off season. There's a lot of good players that they went up against in that league and won that very tough, very competitive league and did it going away, 14-4. There's no way you shouldn't put him in there. You go from there, you go to the next season where they made the NIT and everyone said, well, that was horrible. Well, that season they were within a field goal or a free throw. They missed free throws by good free throw shooters, away from being what should have been an NCAA team that year. And it just kind of went like that. The it was one year after another with a lot of bad luck. And what it really broke down to for me, Jake, and I don't know if you're ready to discuss this topic, but I think it's very essential, is behind the scenes, the world of recruiting was a very cold place for Lorenzo Romar. There was a lot of what's going on now that was being discussed in the world of the FBI. I'm sure it's not as big a deal as, say, the Russia investigation and a variety of other things, but it's a part of their docket. Today, a federal judge just determined that these three guys that were trying to get off with various technicalities are not going to be able to walk. All 10 indictments stand. Those things are still moving forth. And the ESPN report that three dozen NCAA programs are going to be named, according to sources, as far as being involved in pay-to-play. So this is the world that Lorenzo Romar has been competing in. And if you know anything about Husky basketball, you know anything about Lorenzo Romar, if you really know and are around the program, you'll know that he's all about ethics. He's really refuses to let boosters around his guys. He absolutely refuses to let agents monkey around with buying guys stuff and all that. And especially he pushes guys to go to college. And the problem is that Jen Cohen didn't talk to anybody that really knows anything about this stuff. She didn't talk to Trey Simmons. She didn't talk to Brandon Roy. She didn't talk to any of the people that really know Lorenzo Romar and really know what it takes and the kind of guy he is and what he does with his program and the kind of, things that they could have been doing alternately had they wanted to go a different direction. Lorenzo Romar had a whole different system than, for instance, Oregon or Arizona or Kentucky or Louisville or Kansas. And he succeeded in getting the number two or number one class after being screwed a number of times. I'm not trying to say that Aaron Gordon got paid or anything specific like that, but the bottom line is getting screwed over and over by a system that is based a lot on payola and paying the right guy the right thing to get the right player. And, he succeeded in overcoming that to really bring in the kind of talent he needed to compete with. Let's look at the four teams that made the NCAA tournament last year. USC, under indictment, Tony Bland. Arizona, under indictment, Book Richardson. Oregon, the biggest conflict of interest, probably the history of college sports, with Phil Knight as their big booster and Nike. And then, of course, UCLA, a long history of kind of shady stuff, always getting the top players and, just being part of the system. And so the long and short, that's what they were up against, and he succeeded. And yet, Jen, in fact, I had this horrible season, and I really thought that was the least of their problems, and it really came back to shock me that she would do that. And the more I looked into it, the more I realized I believe she made a bad decision based on thinking she knew more about something she doesn't know something about and talking to the wrong people to help her make her decision. That's my opinion. What do you think?
Well, that's a lot to take in there. That's the first time I've really heard. I mean, I've kind of known your whole idea surrounding it and your thing with Jen and what she played into the Romar situation. I mean, I guess I've never really taken the time to think about how the FBI investigation into college hoops played into the Romar thing. I mean, I totally agree with you that Romar was above all that bad ethics stuff. That wasn't what he was about. I think we can all agree that we would be completely shocked if he was ever caught up in anything of the sort. If UW was even mentioned in the allegations that the FBI is coming down with. And, of course, we hear today that you might have touched on it about, you know, there's going to be so many programs that are going to be in trouble that it's not even going to be worth it to the NCAA to get these schools in trouble because it'll just, I mean, it'll be too many. I think the only thing that we could see coming from UW, maybe a rogue assistant or two, you know, I think that's possible. But as far as Lorenzo and his ethics and his recruiting style and all that, I wouldn't argue that he was, you know, he did it right. He did it right.
I agree with you. We have a caller on the line just to let you know, Jake, is that you, Tyrone?
Yeah, Tyrone here.
Tyrone, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. Can you hear me?
You need to speak up. You need to speak up. I didn't want to cut you off, Jake, but there was a guy on the line. I put him on the line. I want to make sure you know he's there. So, Tyrone, do you have anything that you want to add? Thank you, Jake. You have anything you wanted to add to what we're talking about here? Do you have anything to offer right off the bat or a question you have for either of us?
No, I mean, it's all right. Very interesting stuff. I'm just listening to it here right now.
Okay, cool. Well, if you just wanted to just go ahead and listen. So Jake, I just want to let you know what that was all about. So, go ahead and finish your thought, Jake. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, I guess I was just getting to the point that I would like to think that Jennifer Cohen made the decision to let Lorenzo go based off of what she saw as the future. I think the Mike Hopkins hire was very similar to the Chris Peterson hire in the sense that they were kind of in the background. I mean, obviously Chris Peterson was big hit at Boise State, did a lot of stuff, but it was still Boise State. Mike Hopkins was an assistant under Boeheim at Syracuse. And he just hadn't really had that shot to shine yet. And that wasn't going to happen there. And so I guess the comparison would be that it was kind of came out of nowhere. No one thought that when Sarkisian left for USC that UW was going to hire Chris Peterson. That kind of was a surprise to everyone that he finally decided to leave Boise for another job. The Hopkins hire, you know, Mike Hopkins wasn't on anybody's list of potential replacements for Lorenzo Romar. Came out of nowhere, came on the scene, has done a remarkable job. So when I look at it in that sense and I see what her vision that she saw down the road, I like it. I think that she made the right call in that sense. I think it was a program building decision. And now I don't know if now is the right time or not to bring up the whole thing about, you know, your concern that he's, you know, he's here until Boeheim leaves and he's going to bounce back. I know you had posted on
or go to another big school like UConn. You know, that's another thing that I'm hearing is being talked about, you know.
And I know you posted the house. Sorry for interrupting. I know you posted the house, like his house in Bellevue is for sale. And I think that's kind of reading into things. I mean, I did see on a message board a little bit after that. I think it was like Kim Grinnolds from Dogman or something like that. Had said that he's just trying to. Yeah, I know. I'm, you know, like anyone could be saying anything at this point, but that he's just trying to move closer to work, right? It's possible him and his wife just bought a house on a whim when they first got the job out here. I would be shocked if he left after a year. I was having this discussion with a few of my friends earlier in the day. Obviously, being a diehard dog fan, I'm a little biased. I like to think I have an open mind. I don't necessarily see the UW basketball job as a stepping stone. I think we can compete salary-wise with a lot of schools. Like you say, I've always kind of been under the assumption if Mike Hopkins did leave, it would be to take that Syracuse job down the road, whether that's three, 4 years, who knows, with Boeheim. Same sort of situation with Sark when he left for USC, which, looking back on, we were all very thankful for. But with Hopkins, I mean, I would be bummed and pissed if he left for something that wasn't Syracuse and he left in a year or 2 years, you know? I would still probably be upset if he had built something and left for Syracuse in 4 years, but I could understand that.
Well, I think you made a really good point, and I just want to say this. First of all, I think that Mike Hopkins is a good coach, and he's a guy that is, you know, obviously inspired this program to, you know, to take a bunch of guys who had a really tough year last year and get them all working in the right direction with the help of his staff to do good things. There's certain things that I put out there because I'm a good reporter and I report facts, and I no longer really deal a lot in the rumors and things like that I was kind of famous for when I was working at Rivals and 710 ESPN and such like that. And the facts are that, you know, he's got his house listed and that, you know, but I've heard a lot of other rumors that sort of look to me to be that there's a lot of sort of circumstantial things going on that look that he's at the very least keeping his options very open to be heading back east, whether it be, you know, to take a Syracuse job. And I'm talking about, you know, very, very possibly in the next year, very possibly in the next 2 years, or to take a, you know, the UConn job, which is out there. And also another factor in there in all this is that, he's a very good salesman. He's like a motivational speaker. He's really good, but you know, he's a pro. He's a solid pro. And why would he stay with Washington? I know they have the money to do it. To me, they kind of blew it in the eyes of real basketball people when they walked away from Michael Porter Jr. and that kind of talent. If you really know basketball, after you win Nathan Hale with a guy and his younger brother, and you win the national title with one other guy that's in your main rotation who's a D1 prospect, and you beat teams like Oak Hill, who have like 8, 9, 10 D1 guys on them. I mean, it was a magic season, a magic talent with Michael Porter. That just made no sense. But I think that ultimately what it kind of shows is that she just didn't have a real grasp of what it takes to be a real championship program with a real legacy to turn the back on that. And I don't think she understood Romar's problems last year or his problems overall in the past 5 years. Go ahead, Tyrone. What do you say?
I was just saying about Tyrone? How Jonte threw up the dub sign the other day.
Yeah, and Jonte blew up the dub sign the other day. Jonte's a lot of people were talking a lot of smack about Jonte, but keep in mind, he's too young to even go in the draft this June. And he's 6'11", about 240. Jonte is going to be a big-time player in the NBA, in my opinion, unless he has some injury problem, you know, or something like that, which can happen to anybody. You know, Michael Porter is a big-time basketball player. I'm talking about once every 10 years kind of a guy. And I know that a lot of people are saying that, you know, DeAndre Ayton's the same thing and Marvin Bagley, blah, 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 Markelle Fultz. I just don't buy it. I think Michael Porter is just he's like Kevin Durant. He's like Carmelo Anthony. He's like the guys that really define a generation. I really do think that.
And I don't disagree with that. I think that Wright, I think that Carter, both those guys, they're going to have NBA potential down the road. They're going to be terrific.
Good young players. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that a couple guys coming in, Bay and Hardy. Next year, I think they're going to be pretty good. We're still in play for Penn Johnson, and I think that's going to be huge. You know, if he decides to commit to UW, that's going to swing this class a lot, you know. So,
yeah.
I mean, I still think there's some great things out there.
I don't see an equivalence between Jonte Porter and Brian Penn Johnson or Nate Roberts. I don't. I see guys that are tall. I see guys that have some basketball skill and can play the game. Jonte Porter to me is a guy like a Sam Perkins and maybe out of high side like a Tim Duncan. I mean, the guy I think he could have an NBA career almost as good as what Kevin Love has had. That's what I think. So we're in two different worlds as far as how we evaluate talent of these guys. I think Nate Robinson
and
Penn Johnson are just guys that are guys 6'11" and have good bodies. I mean they could be CJ Giles, they could be Robert Upshaw, or they could be worse. I mean, I don't know what
Robert Swift.
You know. They could be Robert Swift, who was actually a really good, really good prospect. He just screwed himself up with drugs. Yeah. What do you think, Tyrone?
Well, he's a really player. I mean, Robert Swift at one point was one of the top guys in the community.
You gotta start. You gotta keep the food out of your mouth while we're doing the show, Tyrone. Tyrone's trying to get a snack. He's probably really hungry. Sorry about that. So, getting back to my point about Romar, you know, I just thought that, you know, Romar to me proved that he could coach, but I think what he had to do is he had to get a staff together that could recruit the kind of players that he needed to really compete and to get into the back in the tournament and get into the top echelon of this conference. And I think that, yes, you know, Hopkins is getting some players and there's some talent there.
I know.
We talked about that. Yeah, I know. It was rough. But the thing is, Tyrone,
that
didn't
was a
must-win
game, dude. Must-win.
Yeah, but didn't I predict it, though? Didn't I predict it? Utah just is not a good fit. Not a good matchup fit for UW. I think they have a shot against Colorado right now, who's battling it out with Wazoo over there in Pullman right now. I think they have a shot against Colorado, and I think they have a shot against Cal down there. I think they have a shot against Oregon State when they get up here. But none of those are going to be gimmies. They got to play better than – they got to play good. They got to play well to win those games. And as conference play, Jake, is unwinding, these coaches in the Pac-12 and these programs that have veteran players and veteran guards and bigs are learning that they have to really be disciplined to beat this zone. And they've already been spanked in most of these cases. So, you know, I think that it's going to be tougher sledding as we go down the line here. What's your thought on that? What's your thought on that, Jake?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of similar to what you have seen come tournament time in recent years. And I, you know, when a team is going to have to face Syracuse, right?
Right.
They were always concerned. And I always remember this even from the early 2000s when I first got into college hoops. I remember hearing about this Syracuse zone. And if you haven't faced it throughout the season and you had to run into them in the tournament, that was going to be an issue for you. Even if your roster was, you know, a ton better than what they were coming out with, it was still going to be difficult because you weren't used to it. You didn't know how to find the holes. You didn't know how to find the lanes, and they made life difficult on you. And I think we are seeing that as Husky fans firsthand this year, running into some of the top teams in the country, and they just can't handle the zone. I think we saw it, against Kansas. I think we saw it against Arizona. I mean, you know, all our surprising top wins this year that we just locked down on defense. Our offense has been slow going for most of the year, and we have some pretty awesome wins. And I think that is attributed to the zone. So I just think the whole idea of it is just, it's pretty cool. But also you need to be able to adjust from that. And first year running that system under Hopkins, I don't think we're prepared to adjust on the fly just yet. We're kind of locked in on learning the zone system, and it's going to be hard to kind of get away from that and then get back to it as quick as fans want to think we could do it. I just think that it's a lot to process for the guys, and it's just, you know, first year learning a brand new system, it's going to be tough to be able to go off of it and then come back.
Well, you make an excellent point, Tyrone. What do you think? I want to hear your take on this. Are you thinking anything specifically on this topic?
Well, I think you make some good points there. I mean, you know, the reality is the zone is, I mean, they've been able to control tempo for the most part this year and keep the scores low, but you know, they're offensively challenged. You know, having trouble scoring the ball. But bottom line is, I mean, there's so many deficiencies. I mean, David Chris is horrible. I mean, he's a low major guard. He should be playing at Montana. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, he's not a point guard. And if people want to say he's playing out of position, that's a bunch of BS. He was a point guard
at Brewster. He was a point guard at Rainier Beach. He was a point guard at Clover Park. He's just not a good basketball player. And if you say he's a two guard, well, he's shooting 17% or 15% now from 3-point range.
Yeah.
So in conference, I mean, the guy, and anytime he makes a shot, he turns over and looks at his cheerleader girlfriend and wants to act like he's about to get tail that night.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, you know, it's unfortunate in David Crisp's case. He's having kind of a rough patch right now. Before this game, he was 10 of 62 in his last 3-point attempts. I just think he's playing
that's
too
solid.
Much. I think that that's too many 3-point attempts for a guy that's shooting that horribly to be taken. But I also think that Jake made a good point. I believe it was Jake made a good point that one of the people on Twitter that he's taking a lot of shots late in the shot clock because they're not getting shots. And he's having
that's
to take,
fault.
You know, wild threes. And but thing, but
that's
it is kind of his fault. It is because he's not setting up the offense. He's not setting up players for good shots. Yeah. He's just not a great point guard. I like David Crisp as a player, and I want to see him work hard.
What is he? A six foot shooting guard that can't shoot?
Yes, he is. To me, he is a good, solid guy to have in your rotation that can give you some heat sometimes off the bench. And be a positive guy in the locker room. He's kind of a rah-rah guy.
He's got no right hand. He literally has no right hand.
That's true.
You watch a full game of him. He can't go right. If he goes right, he takes one or two dribbles and picks up because he can't go right. I mean, you're literally playing with a guy that's handicapping your offense because he can't go right. He can't see over the top on the zones. On the post as he passes, he can't shoot. He's got no flow to his game. He pounds the ball in the court. How many times have you seen him hold the ball instead of swinging it right away, take 2 split seconds, and then make the swing pass, and then the 3-point shot's contested instead of wide open?
We've been watching it for 3 years. Absolutely.
So many deficiencies, but you know, I mean, Hopkins has dealt with what he's dealt with. I mean, like I said, Romar recruited him. Romar had a lack of point guard depth for a while there was a problem that he had. And then he, he solved it kind of with Dejon Davis and Blake Harris, I think, would have been pretty
well,
good.
And the other thing is I was going to say something before I wanted to pass this over to Jake, but I was going to say that, you know, his comment about Blake Harris is really off the mark, I thought. I think Blake Harris in the context of Missouri basketball – was not really given a great amount of great chance. Konzo Martin kind of made this decision to go with his veteran guys, his grad transfer, and that Geist guy. And Blake Harris kind of got shut out. So I think at UW he would have been a nice change of pace guy off the bench for a starting point guard, probably Dejon Davis. Crisp would be a good backup for Jalen Nowell. And I think, honestly, Matisse Thybulle probably would be a starter, play starters minutes. But I could see Michael Porter being a really, really tough cover at the three. Let's just be honest. I mean, it goes beyond me that people can't see this. All right, Jake, what do you think
about
David Crisp?
Who's better out of Bob Rory or David Crisp?
You're asking me, Mod Rory or David Crisp? I think I'm Mod because he's stronger with the ball. I think he's probably a better point guard overall. I think he and Chris would be an okay backcourt because they give you a good solid versatility between the two of them. But I certainly with Amon Rory and Jalen Nowell, that would look a lot better than me. What do you think, Jake?
Hey, were you saying that you disagreed with me on the Blake Harris notion?
Yeah, I do. I think he would have been a better asset to the UW program as a guy to compete for minutes with Dejon Davis as a starting point guard. Because I think Dejon
and
Blake, those, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't mean to be hard on him, and I tried to make it clear that I wasn't labeling him as a complete bust.
No, he's a freshman.
Young kid.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, sure. And he's
going
to get it together, and, you know, maybe he would have been happier at UW, and maybe he would have played better. He would have been given more opportunities. Who knows what the situation is. As far as Davis goes, I think that what you're seeing with him this year is he's playing with a lot of veterans, you know.
Yep, true.
He's not being asked to do as much as maybe he would have been asked to do here at UW. So, again, it's another one of those situations where it's tough to really predict what we would have been looking at. It's like anything, you know. It's like all any sort of sports comparison that is impossible to really judge, you know, Michael or LeBron, that sort of thing. It's like we'll never know, so we could just debate it till the end of time.
Sure.
I mean, obviously I would love to have Blake Harris on this roster or Davis, both of them.
Sure.
But
well, I'll tell you what.
Would,
Tyrone, what do you Tyrone, what's your thought on Dejan, Tyrone?
I mean, I like Dejan. I think he's talented. I mean, you know, he's still a freshman and up and down offensively. And he started the year with, you know, some heavy turnover numbers, which started to balance out. And, I mean, he's talented. He's tall for a point guard. He's got all the tools to be a great defender. He's explosive. He's good at changing pace off the dribble and speed. I mean, we saw what he can do in clutch time. A couple of real big games this year. I mean, clearly, if you got him, he'd be starting right now point, I think, over David Chris. And I think he would be a guy that could probably play 3 years. But, you know, I actually think Michael Carter's okay now. I mean, he's okay, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If he keeps improving, he's serviceable. He works really hard. But I think the problem is, you have so much elite talent coming in that Romar had that Hopkins kind of had, the odds were against him, you know, coming in. He had to get a class together real late in the game and, you know, because all that talent decided to leave elsewhere. So, I mean, it is kind of remarkable what they've done. But like you said, I mean, these teams are starting to figure out this zone. They're going right to the middle of it, getting easy shots, and then when we try to collapse down low to prevent the middle action and the ball, the reverse ball side swings are getting threes.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that everybody's talking about how Hopkins is really doing it. Honestly, I think what's going to, I mean, I look back at 2 years ago and DeJounte Murray and Marquise Chris and Andrew Andrews and that team started out 6-2, guys. I'm sure you all both remember that. 6-2 in Pac-12. Then they lost a game and make it 6-3. And then they just fell apart, okay, and ended up 9-9. But, you know, the thing is they start out like a house of fire, but they were all freshmen except for Malik Dime, who had actually been playing less than most of the freshmen. He only been playing, like, basketball for, like, 3 years. They were all except for Andrew Andrews. And teams figuring them out in the second half. And I think that that's what's going to happen, unfortunately, to Washington this year. And it's going to be a lot tougher sledding going from here on out. But I think they have a chance. I think they have a chance. I think, like you said, they keep fighting hard. But I think, like Hopkins said after the Arizona game, he said, we only go as far as David Crisp. He said, let's slip out, and it's kind of true. If David Crisp is playing within himself and not making – you know, too many crazy moves inside and bad decisions and bad shots. And he's actually just not really handling the ball all that much and letting just doing what he's told offensively. He can be effective, you know, but what do you think, Jake?
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to, as I sit back and listen to you guys talk about it and what it could have been and what it is now. I mean, it's just such a tough comparison. And, you know, that's why I was on the fence about firing Romar to begin with, you know. I thought that class was going to be amazing, and I totally see where you're coming from on that angle. I guess I just kind of started looking at it more from a distant future perspective. And when I started doing that, it looked better. When you bring in the points about, you know, Hopkins potentially just having his eye on an East Coast job, whether it be Q's or UConn or whatever else might pop up, that makes me a little nervous. You know, I don't like to consider UW being a stepping stone program at all for any sport.
I mean, I'm not even a huge women's basketball fan, I'll be honest, but it kind of upset me when their coach left for a new job in the Midwest, you know. I was thinking,
right.
man, I
yeah.
feel like
yeah.
UW is a great place to be. So, you know, it's hard to debate whether what this team would look like under Romar with that recruiting class. Let me ask you this. How do you think the team,
sure.
that recruiting class, would look under Hopkins this year?
Well, that's a great question, and I think that Mike Hopkins is a good coach. I think that Cameron Dollar is a guy that knows how to teach defense. So I think that, and I think he also helped him teach that zone so that it could, so that these guys could absorb it. I think he's a bulldog. I think anybody will tell you. I think Isaiah Thomas. I think anybody will tell you, up and down the Husky roster while Cameron Dollar was here, how great of a coach that guy is to do what he does. And so as far as being an assistant coach and being able to get guys motivated to play defense, all you have to do is look at that number one seed in 2004-05 and look and see what they did. I mean, they challenged everything from every dribble, every inbounds pass, every shot. They were an incredible defensive team. Then Romar was hailed as some sort of a genius. Well, it wasn't all Romar. Part of it was Cameron Dollar. And it was also part of Cameron Dollar, you know, on a lot of other levels. He was a good, solid part of that thing back, and he's helped out. I just think that, you know, getting back to what I think about this class, I just think for me it's incompetence on the part of Jan Cohen to make a decision to let that go, when it's pretty obvious to me that when Lorenzo has had depth, talent, experience, and balance, that means when he has enough big men, when he has enough guards, when he has point guards, all the essential ingredients, he has shooters, when he's got balance and depth and talent and experience, he's won. And he accomplished that by getting that class. And what's more, he struck out with Jabari Parker. He struck out with Terrence Jones. He struck out with Aaron Gordon. He struck out with Brandon Ashley. He struck out with Angelo Chole. And I'm not saying all those guys were pay to play and they're all driving around Ferraris that the other team who got them paid for. But the pay to play system is very real.
I think it's fair to say that we lost Terrence Jones on one of the pay-to-play schemes. Let's be real.
I think it's fair to say that, too. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. I think all four of them were involved in a system that's very corrupt. And I think that Lorenzo lost them all. And the tragic part about it is that Michael and Jontay Porter, as a pair, have such incredible chemistry. I don't think you can come up with a pair of players at a high school in the history of basketball, seriously, of a brothers, you know, team that were more impressive than what they did at Nathan Hale last year. And when you're getting two guys that are big guys like that, big skill guys, and on top of that, Romar, to me, has proven that he can coach. But Jen Cohen made that decision without talking to a single former millionaire ex-player of Romar's. She made that decision, in my opinion, without talking to any of them, with the possible exception of maybe one or two, and I'm not going to name any names. But she made that decision based on a lot of very poor judgment. And I think that truthfully, and you mentioned before about this, about the NCAA and these three dozen teams that are going to be named soon by the FBI, and the hype that, well, none of them are going to get penalized by the NCAA. Well, that doesn't surprise me, because NCAA has been complacent and sort of enabling for this pay-to-play from the very beginning. And they look the other way when it's Kentucky. They look the other way when it's teams that are just so incredibly huge and make them so much money. And they penalize the little ones that they can get away, so they can say that they're a governing body. And I think that this situation with the FBI right now is going to really expose it, and the NCAA is going to have to do something. And if they don't, I mean, you know, I guess maybe who cares? A lot of guys are going to go to prison, hopefully, and maybe enforce the rules and stop pay to play, because they don't want to go to prison. I mean, the thing is, they it's, you know, the
the NCAA, who knows what they're going to do, but I do know this. UW never should have fired Romar. They should have brought that class in. They should have. They would be a team now to this year that would have been much, much improved. I think worst case scenario, much improved to the same degree that UCLA was improved when they brought in Lonzo Ball, TJ Leaf, and all those guys from the year before when they were pretty horrible. They would have had a team that would have been in the NCAA tournament. Maybe Hopkins the better coach, but you know, what if he goes to back to Syracuse? What if this is the stepping stone for him? My sources say that's very likely.
Are you ready to put the house for sale in Bellevue thing to rest though? Because I think
I'm not ready to do that. I think that Kim Grinnell's is a 100% bootlicker. I won't use the more vulgar way of putting it for Jen Cohen. And I absolutely do not think that there's any truth to that. I think the truth of the matter is that he may possibly have told Kim Grinnell, the Hopkins may have told Kim Grinnell in response to a question that he wants to move closer to Seattle. But I actually talked to somebody that talked to the listing agent that said, this is something I'm going to come out and say, although it's not confirmed, it's secondhand information, so take it for what it's worth, that she's been telling potential buyers that the owners are moving out of town.
Now, whatever that means,
that could be moving from Bellevue to Seattle. Who knows? But I'm just saying. I'm just saying it's a possibility.
What job would he already be in play for at this time of year, though? I mean, I think it's hard to say that Boeheim is going to retire at the end of this season. I don't think that's going to happen. So what other job would he be in play for right now at this time that he knew
what
that he
job
would be taking?
What job was Coach Peterson in play for when all of a sudden Sarkisian was out of here? I think everybody knows
that
Scott Woodward
was
talking quietly with him behind the scenes for a
days.
Long time.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that because, I mean, they didn't even really formally interview Peterson. They already basically handed him the job. It's funny you would say that because I was just rereading an article earlier in the day about when Woodward was sitting in the office with Sark and he basically already knew he was going to take that job. So, yeah, granted, Cohen would probably know that Hopkins would take another job and she would probably already know it ahead of time. But I also think it's pretty premature to assume that at this point in the season and in his tenure at UW. It's his first head coaching job. I don't think he can afford to just jump around like that. It's a Pac-12 job. It's in one of the best basketball towns in the country. Granted,
it is
I'm biased,
a great basketball town.
But
I agree.
I don't think Jen Cohen knows that he would just bounce out a year into a gig that he's already, in some fans' minds, destroying, and he hasn't even done much yet.
No, I absolutely agree with you. I think that Mike Hopkins would be a great coach to stay at Washington. I would love to see it. If he would stay and really build something here, and I think that would be great, and I hope that's the case. I'm just saying that I've been around, and I also understand that when you A-B programs like Syracuse with Washington, what Jen Cohen did to Lorenzo Romar and Michael Porter Jr. and Michael Porter Sr. and Jonte Porter, you know, what she did in that situation – to me, did not upgrade the view that Washington is a football school and a Title IX school and not a sophisticated high-level men's basketball program. Now, the FBI has changed all that perception a great deal. So, but the other side of that is that Lorenzo Romar, from my perspective, would have been a heavy beneficiary of all the upheaval from all the pay-to-plays and the sleaze bags of the elite blue blood community, because I think a lot of recruits, maybe even some transfers, might have decided, hey, I'm going to throw my lot in with a guy that's going to be around that can get guys into the league. And, you know, I'm going to go that way and I want to play with Michael Porter Jr. and Jonte Porter and Jalen Noel or whatever. I think Lorenzo could have benefited by that even in spring.
2017, time when Michael Porter Sr. got Kevin Knox to visit Missouri and ended up convincing Jeremiah Tillman to go after he changed over from Illinois. I mean, I think Lorenzo could have got more talent in here, and I think this year would have been better. I think they'd be more capable of competing as we head closer to the NCAA tournament, and I think that overall Michael Porter Jr. is a guy. I mean, he averaged 35 and 14 last year at Nathan Hale. He literally could average 70 if they wanted him to. He just had his way. Now, at this level, he would have had more of a challenge. But, you know, I think that, you know, had he been healthy, it would have been a whole different story at Missouri this year. And he is going to play. So we'll see. But at least that's the word. So, but I'll tell you, this has been a fun conversation. I think we just touched the surface on a number of these things, but I think that, you know, really what it comes down to is, you know, Hopkins is a good guy. He's done a good job. I just don't know that he's got the same kind of loyalty to the Huskies as Jake and Jim Bassknight. You know, I think he's a pro, and I think Syracuse is, you know enough about college basketball to know what kind of job Syracuse is. Now, is he going to turn that job down when it comes available? Would he turn down UConn? Would he turn down Kansas for UW? You know, could Jen Cohen pay the kind of money it would take to keep him here? You know, these are questions that I'm more skeptical maybe than you. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to think that isn't the case, but I mean, when you bring up Kansas or something like that, but is a school like that going to come after him right now? I just don't see that.
Syracuse.
Yeah, but when is that going to be? That would be my one concern, and I guess it's hard to – it's not like you could get him to commit to not taking that job, right? I mean, it kind of almost reminds me of being a Seahawks fan with John Schneider and the GM opening in Green Bay, right? Everyone always thought that
right.
He was going to go after that job when that came open. That's home to him.
Right.
I don't know how – it might not work the same way in college, but in the NFL at least, you could write into a contract, you can't take this job when it comes open. Did they do that with Schneider? No. I don't know if that would be a thing that would be you'd be able to accomplish at UW with Hopkins. And I also don't think it would be necessary to do, but it would be nice to at least know if and when that job became open, if he was going to want to be a part of that.
If you look at his contract with UW, and we're going over a little bit here but we're having such a good conversation, I don't care. Basically, if you look at his contract with UW, I think you'll find that the buyout is very favorable for him to be able to get out of here if he wants to. So
yeah, when you start talking about that stuff, it makes me think that when he took the job initially, he thought, hey, maybe I can get away from Syracuse for a little bit and still have this job waiting for me when I want to come back. And that is bothersome, but I would like to think that he also feels that he could build something here and remain in Seattle on a long-term basis, raise his kids here. I know he has two young boys, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he has some family history here, and he will want to stay here. But at the same time, maybe he did see it as an opportunity to skip coasts and, give himself a chance to grow and then head back to Syracuse when he wants to.
I don't think Mike Hopkins is the devil. I think that he's being an open-minded guy when it comes to the Washington job. I just think that there's other forces in play here. I think that you're talking about Nike. We didn't even touch on the fact that Adidas right now is making a huge push to sponsor UW, okay? Remember Adidas, the guys that were named in the FBI scandal, okay? Well, I got news for you. Nike is as dirty or dirtier than Adidas. They started it. Nike started it. Okay, Sonny Vaccaro and Phil Knight started the whole thing of pay-to-play, of all the AAU corruption, the whole platform. They started it. So Nike and Adidas are both playing the same game. That's why there's three dozen schools that are going to end up, and I guarantee they're not going to be all the Adidas schools. So what happened is Adidas and Nike right now are kind of squabbling over this UW thing,
And I think that what happened was, Jake, I don't know anything specific, but I just follow the money. And I also know basketball and know a little bit about the personalities in play and the kind of I can sort of smell the gangsters in the continent when I see them. But here's the deal. Okay. There's what you say. And there's the hope that Mike Hopkins is earnest when he says he really loves Seattle and his son really loves Seattle. And he'd love nothing more than to turn Washington into a big, huge power. All great. Okay, but then there's also the part of it that knows that there's these guys running around that finance a good chunk of the University of Washington athletic program. There's a difference between the place staying open and keeping the lights on in a lot of their programs and a lot of their personnel. So, and those people are called Nike. And Nike is, across the country does this for schools all over the place. Nike sneezes, all these people get pneumonia. And so it's all about money, okay? So let's just say Jen Cohen, she goes, I don't know what to do about this Lorenzo Romar guy. I don't know what to say. I want to call these guys from Nike and ask them, hey, Nike, what should I do about Lorenzo Romar? Well, okay, we got this guy Mike Hopkins. He's really, really good. He's incredible. Wait till you meet him. He's really good, and he wants a chance to be a head coach. He's been waiting in line for Syracuse. Okay, blah, blah, blah. Okay, let's say they tell Syracuse, hey, check this out. I can get you this gig for a couple of years. You can really establish yourself as a head coach and be the head coach and then come back here and you'll have a good chance with a team out there in the Pac-12 to show what you can do. And then you come back to Syracuse where the big money is, where we sink tons and tons of our support and do what we do to support these teams in major basketball teams for you out there. You see, I think Jen Cohen kind of got played maybe by the whole situation. There's a possibility. I don't know if she knows that. And I don't know if she knows. And the other side of it is I think there's a possibility that, hey, she already knows that Hopkins was going to be temporary, but she just wanted to get rid of Romar because, hey, look, Nike does a lot for the football program. Our football program is where the money, real money is. If we don't make big money on football, we're insolvent. They do a lot for Title IX sports. They do a lot for non-revenue sports for us. I'm just going to do what they want. And as far as I can tell, what they want was to get rid of Lorenzo. If you look at the AAU circuit, there's guys making money, a lot of money, getting guys to go to those big schools that pay. And you start losing Michael Porter, Jonte Porter. Next thing you know, you lose Markel Fultz. You losing Emmanuel Quickly maybe the next year, who never knows. That's big money out of those guys' pockets, That's a lot of money out of those guys' pockets to send those guys to Washington where they're not going to get paid, or to send to Kentucky where they're going to get paid top dollar and everyone's going to get a party thrown for them with a bunch of hookers. So the key thing is there's two ways of looking at it. There's my way, which is like the very much pessimistic, kind of world-weary, veteran of con artists, gangsters, and sleaze merchants. And then there's the opposite, which is, it's basketball. Mike Hopkins loves basketball. We love Seattle. And what's not to love about Seattle? Maybe he'll just fall in love with Seattle, and maybe he'll turn Washington into a major, major success. And I hope you're right. I hope you're right. Do you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay. I'll give you the last word. I took a long time. I'll give you the last word.
That's funny because I always hear that I like to have the last word.
I want you to have the last word.
I mean, it's everything that you say makes sense to me. It didn't necessarily make sense to me on Twitter to begin with.
Okay.
It makes sense to me hearing it in this conversation we've had for the last hour plus. I like to think that I trust Jennifer Cohen a little bit more in her decision-making.
Why?
I always joke with my friends that I think she's really attractive. So I kind of have that thing going for me where I have to lean on that. Like Jennifer Cohen, my girl.
Nothing wrong with that. She's not a bad-looking person at all. No, that's fine.
Being serious again, I hope that she – I feel like she made the right decision on the basketball thing. She mm-hmm. I mean, we give her a lot of credit for the Peterson hire, even though she wasn't the AD. Mm-hmm. That's worked out. Some other coaching hires have worked out underneath her. I think it's tough to say right now. I think in a year, two, 3 years, when we see what Hopkins ultimately decides to do, where he takes the program, we'll be able to really make that determination that it was the right call or not. It's like anything. It's like a draft class in the NFL or something. You can't really evaluate mm-hmm. it for 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to be paranoid every year that Hopkins is going to leave for a bigger and better job, that's a problem. I don't feel like mm-hmm. – I feel like UW is above that. You shouldn't have coaches
so.
That you're worried about leaving. I think it's
okay.
kind of, you know, there were some funny rumors online earlier in the coaching off season for NCAA football with Peterson, like at Tennessee wanting to talk to him or something like that. It's like the guy's
sure.
not
mm-hmm.
leaving. I think we all know he's not leaving.
Well, Washington,
I feel like we should,
school. I mean, you've seen Husky.
Yeah. And
stadium.
I feel
you
like we should have
there.
The same okay. thing in basketball though. We were never really worried about Romar leaving. There was maybe one off season when the Timberwolves wanted to hire him or something like that, but was it really that big of a concern? No. And I'd like to think we had the same thing with basketball. So I guess time will tell, but right now I like the direction things are heading. I don't like to think of our coach leaving for another job. It's possible, but right now, as it sits today, I'm fully supportive of Jennifer Cohen and the direction of the athletic program. The basketball program, and I'm excited about it, and hopefully it all works out.
Well, I appreciate it. I think it's a nice attitude. I and not for Jennifer Cohen, because I think she made a horrible mistake. I think she made the wrong decision, and I think that I would have supported her 100% if they brought in that class, and then Romar really ham-handed, like all these negative naysayers say that he was going to do, have another 500 season, have another 10 and 20 year, blah, 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 with Michael Porter. I just didn't see that coming. I saw a big year, probably a sweet 16 year, and a real turning around of the program. And I also saw a really good class in state in 2018, and we went 0-5 with the top guys this year. So I look at that situation, and I just think that it was a bad mistake that they fired Romar. And other than that, I mean, I love going to volleyball games. Jennifer Cohen's done a great job with a lot of things to do with Washington Athletics. I just think that basketball is too important to me, and I think she really screwed it up, and that's my final feeling and decision on it. And I just hope that Mike Hopkins, who I think is a good hire, under the circumstance that she completely obliterated the program by firing Romar at this time, I hope he does in fact stay and put to rest all the concern that I have. And on that note, thank you very much for coming on the air and talking with us.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it, Jake.
We should do this again, I think, because this was a blast.
It was a fun, and I think you're a good person to talk to. It was great. I've had this conversation before, and as you know, we cover the whole Northwest and do a lot with in the Big Sky and, you know, the Cougars and Gonzaga and, you know, the WCC and everybody else. So I can't do this every week, but when it comes time to talking Husky basketball, you're definitely a strong consideration. I'd love to do it with you.
I greatly appreciate that. My freshman year I spent at Eastern Washington University in Cheney. So I can touch
well,
on Big
go.
Sky a little bit as well when it's necessary.
That sounds good. Well, I'll tell you, Ahmad Rory came up today, so we can't stop talking about the Big Sky. I mean, Montana's killing it, bro. They're just totally killing
yeah.
it right now. It's cool to watch, and you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do. Maybe if they can sneak a win in the NCAA tournament this year or something. But everybody
definitely.
On that team's coming back, including Donovan Dorsey will be back, and they've got a great recruiting class too. They're going to be really good next year if all goes well, you know.
Yeah, that Donovan Dorsey guy. And hey, let me, I got to give a quick shout out because you're totally
Please.
Into college hoops. And my guy, Rocco Miller, he can be found on Twitter at Rocco Miller 8. And he's
uh-huh.
he does bracketology stuff. And he's, I'm a little biased. He went to UW, but he is
uh-huh.
not biased at all when it comes to his hoops takes. And he's a great bracketologist. And I recommend all your listeners to go check him out on Twitter and find him
oh,
on
sure.
bracketeer.org. Because he does some awesome stuff, and it's spot on.
I really appreciate that. I'm looking forward to having him on. Maybe you can come on with him and we can talk bracketology and UW in one show, which would be really fun. So
absolutely.
I was going to say also, as we get closer to Selection Sunday, but I was going to say also, you brought up Kim Grinnell, and he's just, to me, he's like a kind of a buffoon. So I think while you give somebody a shout out, I'm gonna give someone a complete dish out. Kim, you need to get rid of those high heels and wear pants where you can't see your butt crack when you're trying to take those pictures in the underneath the basket. It's really kind of not pleasant. Anyway, on that note, we'll see you next week. Talking hoops.
Thanks, Jim,
so I'm horrible. I'm this is the worst show I've done in so long, and I apologize for it. And thank you very much for doing a good show. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Good night, everybody. I'm ashamed of myself. I should be saying, always be a good sport, be a good sport always. And after that comment about Kimmy Grinnell, you know, I don't know if I can face myself. Not good. Kim went out of his way to attack my credibility today on his site, as he's done many times over the years. So forgive me. Thank you.